The way we look at the world is often shaped by the colors we see. Color can convey an emotion, like red for anger or for love. It can tell us a temperature, like a cold blue. It can symbolize an idea, like green for nature. Sometimes our eyes can deceive us, and two people might look at the same object and see two different colors. There was that famous dress that went viral back in 2015 that people saw as either blue and black or white and gold. There's a less famous pair of shoes that I saw as gray, but everybody else in the whole world saw as brown. Many paintings or other artworks can create optical illusions with color that make you perceive the same color differently just based on what else is around it. Our next guest has spent years researching the way our eyes and our brains perceive colors to understand how it works and how it shapes the way we see reality. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you ever disagree with friends or family members about what color something is? Do you have questions about how we see colors, where we might get things wrong, how it all works in our minds? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Bevel Conway is a neuroscientist, artist, and senior investigator in the Perception, Cognition, and Action section of the National Eye Institute within the National Institutes of Health. Bevel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Rob.
You've devoted a lot of your work to studying color. What led you down that path?
I started as a kid, you know, when my mother's sister gave me my first set of real watercolors, you know, the kinds in tubes. When I was probably seven, and I just remember squeezing out these saturated pigments and watching the puddles just bleed into each other. And it was like, you know, better than movies. I got to create it. It was like I was the director of my own little movie. And I just was like, this is so cool.
Now, what actually is color? When young Bevel was looking at that paint color, what was happening?
Yeah, you know, the question of what is color is perhaps the oldest question in psychology. It goes way back to the ancient Greeks. And, you know, what's really interesting is that there was this shift when we developed technology like cameras that made us think that we could take color out of the world. You could make a black and white picture. And, you know, before we had that technology, vision was color. That's all there was. It was, you open your eyes, you look around, the stuff you see around you is just color. It's like there. And so, you know, there's been this kind of interesting experiment that technology has done to us to make us think that color is somehow something we can pull out of the world, but it's really not. You know, your question is, what is color? It's lots of different things. And the way I like to think about it is it's really the interaction, the two sides of a coin between the stuff in the world and your mind. And it's kind of where those two things meet, make this thing we call color.
And different cultures, and I remember this back in school, different cultures might have more or fewer words for color, different ways of divvying up the spectrum. What do we see? How much variety is there out there in what cultures call colors?
There is a terrific variety in what different cultures call colors, the way they carve up what we think of as a color space. So, you know, some languages, they may only have two or three terms that everybody in the community knows that they can use to communicate colors. And other cultures, like, you know, English is one of them, we have probably 15, 20 terms that everybody in the society and the culture knows. You know, one of the old questions is whether or not that means that the people, the cultures that only have two or three color terms, do they not see those colors? And that is absolutely wrong. They definitely see those colors. They see all the colors that we see with our fancy color naming system. They just, you know, for one reason or another, they haven't sort of settled on needing to communicate what they see to each other.
What is going on in our brains when we get that visual input? What's going on to say, yeah, that's red, but that's blue, Rob?
Oh my God, that is the million-dollar question. So, you know, when you walk around, people have probably heard of rods and cones, the two types of photoreceptor cells in your eye. You can think of these as, you know, little eggs in an egg carton, a big cup egg carton, all facing the incoming light, you know, ready to catch it like a catcher in a baseball game. They're all sitting there waiting for their photon to arrive. And when, you know, in normal daylight, We only use the cones. So the rods are completely quiet or almost completely quiet. And so that means that the cone types that you have, the three cones you have in your eye, they are supporting everything you think of as vision during daylight. So they give you black and white vision and color vision and motion and faces and where you are in the world and everything you think of as vision. And those three cone types happen to be tuned to different parts of the rainbow. So you've got one that's tuned more towards shorter wavelengths, and then you've got two that are squished very close in, you know, their peak sensitivity is right in what we call yellow in the rainbow. And somehow your visual system sort of listens to these three cone types in the eye and says, okay, you know, I'm going to compare this one and this one and this one and this one, and I'm going to, you know, interpret those signals to be red or to interpret those signals to be blue. But there's a heck of a lot more that's going on than just a kind of straightforward code listening to those three cone types in the retina. There's all the stuff about what you expect to see, what you've seen before, whether or not, you know, that patch of light is next to another patch of light. You know, when you were an elementary school kid, I mean, if you aren't still like me painting, you know, you remember putting a colored mark on the page and then, you know, someone comes along and says, okay, now you filled in your apple with that color. Now paint the background, and you go and paint the background. And all of a sudden the color you thought was perfectly good in the apple is now a different color. And you're like, ah, why did that do that? And that's because color isn't just related to the light coming to your eye from one little patch in the scene, in the painting. What you ascribe to that patch in the painting is actually a kind of unconscious summing together of everything that you are seeing right now and everything you've seen before.
We're talking about the science of color with neuroscientist Bevel Conway. You can join in with your questions, your experiences with perceiving, maybe misperceiving color at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Shelley is with us in Blanchardville. Shelley, hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I was just going to comment that every time we put paint on a wall, my husband and I definitely argue about what color it is and whether or not we need to run back to Menards to get a different version.
Yeah, who's right when you argue about this, Shelley?
Never him.
Thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate that. So what is the deal there? And I think a lot of people have had that experience where we disagree over what color something is. What's going on, Bevel?
Yeah. And, you know, there are a couple of different factors going on there. So one of them is, you know, when you go and you buy that, you get that paint sample from the wall and you put it on the wall, you know, are you painting the whole wall with that color before you decide what color it is? A lot of people, you know, get a little sample, they put it on the wall and they think, yeah, that looks good. And then they paint the whole wall and all of a sudden it doesn't look as yellow as you thought it was going to. So there can be some of this sort of, how good are you at picturing in your mind's eye what colors things will turn out? But, you know, one of the most interesting features of color is the gender asymmetry. So, you know, speaking in general terms, this certainly isn't true of all men and all women, but women tend to have more color terms than men, and they tend to kind of care more about it. They talk more about color terms or use color terms more often in language. It's almost like they're a little bit more attentive. And I'm in a same-sex family. I have a male spouse, you know, so we're sort of stuck just with the two of us trying to figure out what to do with our children and how to relate to them and make sure they get enough color terms. But one of the things that one of the experiments we ran a number of years ago was we asked people what colors things looked like when they sat inside a room that was illuminated with low pressure sodium light. I don't know if you're familiar with this light. It's that kind of eerie yellow light that they used to have in parking garages.
Parking ramps, yeah.
Yeah. And what's weird about that light is that your retina can't encode any color information. You're actually completely colorblind. And most people sort of don't notice right away. They're like, something's weird. I don't know exactly what's going on. And when we tested men and women in this environment, the women were much more likely to be like, there's something fishy. No, I can't see color properly. And your face, wow, that looks really green and weird. And the men were like, you know, they'd mark down on a on a little display what they were seeing. And exactly what they were seeing looked just like what the women were seeing. They just were not particularly inclined to tell us about it.
We are talking to National Eye Institute neuroscientist Bevel Conway about how we see colors, the way our color perception shapes our reality. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think a lot about the role of colors in your day-to-day life, maybe your line of work? If you're colorblind, I'd love to hear from you about how that affects your life. Join in with your experiences or questions about color at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Bevel Conway, neuroscientist, artist, and senior investigator at the National Institutes of Health. He's with us today to share his research into how we see color and the ways our color perception can affect our everyday lives. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, maybe your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Got an email from Emmanuel in Strawberry Point, Iowa. Emmanuel writes, "When I go from a bright room into a dimly lit room, I see what's there fine, but with a slightly different overlay of small red dots with yellow circles around them and green circles around those. Are these my cones continuing to fire at full blast?" He says, "I don't have diabetes or any visual abnormality. Is that a thing, Bevan?"
Well, that is very interesting. It's definitely not your single cones. They would fire with two, you know, that if you activate a single cone at a time, the dot of light that you would see is so small that most people wouldn't notice it. There is a technique now that's being used to try and do that. And I actually had my retina stimulated with single photons of light not too long ago, just to see what it's like. My guess is that it's probably related to the blood vessels that carry red blood cells in the blood vessels in front of the eye. And there's they're refracting a little bit of light, and that may be what you're seeing. But it's an interesting observation.
Thanks for that note. Let's go back to our callers now. Sam is with us in Shatek. Sam, hi.
Going back to the lady that said she and her husband can't agree on colors.
Oh, we lost Sam. We got a note. He told our producer that the True Value Hardware there won't allow men to buy paint unless he's got a signed certificate from his wife. Okay. Sorry we lost you, Sam. That actually reminds me of a follow-up, Bevel. You mentioned that, you know, at least in American culture, women have more words for color, more interest in it. Do we know, is this something biologically brain-based? Is this a social thing? Women are brought up to be more interested in these colors. Do we have a why behind that?
It's probably a social thing. In fact, it's almost certainly a social thing. One of the big questions in our business is, why do we have color? And some of your listeners might be like confused. Why is there a color expert at the National Institutes of Health? That seems weird. and the answer is that color is one of the first things that first aid responders will notice when they look at someone. You know, they're called to attend to someone who's in duress, and one of the first things they'll look at is the color of their skin, because it tells you a lot about someone's health status. When our children were brand newly born, they were tiny little preemies, and they spent 2 months in the NICU, and the senior nurse came by on the first day and said, you know, "I know a lot of new parents just are itching to put some clothes on their babies, but we can't do that because we need to see the color of their skin in order to know how healthy these children are. And, you know, if they take a nosedive health-wise, we'll see it right away in the skin, which we won't see necessarily or hear in the monitors." And so, you know, you can build up a kind of cultural story that in America, historically, traditionally, you know, women have been more assigned to a kind of caregiving role. And so maybe they're sort of through cultural acclimatization and so on, more likely to care about color in that way. But certainly, you know, men are perfectly capable of having the same level of color as women. There is one way in which it's biologically determined that men can have sort of worse color vision. And that's that, you know, red-green color blindness is genetic and is carried on the X chromosome. And since men only have one X chromosome, if they've got a screw up on that X chromosome, it shows up as red-green color blindness. So red-green color blindness is much more common in men than it is in women. But the sort of disagreements that, you know, husbands and wives are having at the paint shop, those are very unlikely to have to do with, you know, genetic colorblindness.
Let's go to Carol now in De Pere. Carol, hi.
Hi. I have a question about light perception. I've only had light perception for several years now. Lost all detail and color vision, but I see yellow. Like today, the sun is out, I guess. So I see everywhere yellow. And if it's a cloudier day, it might be a grayish yellow. Is that just the visual cortex of the brain rather than anything with the retina?
What's the nature of your sort of health history? Have you lost most of your vision? Is this acquired? This is a new thing?
It's not new. I was low vision my whole life. I was a preemie with an oxygen problem. But I had vision enough to get through college and work. But now, it's down to just light perception. And, you know, I do everything by audio now.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Carol, thanks for sharing that experience. Bevel, is this something you've encountered before?
So it could be a number of different things. And obviously, I'm not examining a patient right now. So I would caution against taking too seriously whatever I say. But, you know, as we age, one of the things that happens to your lens, that's the, you know, the focusing part of the focusing apparatus inside your eye, is that it yellows. And it could be possible, most people adapt to the yellowing of their lens with age, but it could be possible that is something that's contributing to her experience.
Thanks a lot for sharing that experience, Carol, at 800-642-1234. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. I've always wanted to say this. There's something dysfunctional when I see someone adding blue food coloring to a mini golf course waterfall or a casino pool or something. They don't need to add blue, but they want to add blue because they want people to perceive it as, you know, like a pristine blue pool of water. Mm-hmm. Water is clear.
Jeff, I worked at my uncle's swimming pool store back in the day. Yeah, there is a bluer, I can't remember what they call it, but a bluening product that you can add to water. We really want to perceive water as blue, Bevel, even though it's transparent, I guess.
I love the observation. I know in Chicago, I was there one year where they had their St. Patrick's Day parade, and they filled the river there with green, or the canal with green paint. And it was the most disconcerting visual experience. I mean, the blueness of water is interesting. The reason people like or think of water as being blue is obviously it's usually reflecting a blue sky, because the water functions as a very strong reflector. And so we have a kind of deeply ingrained association of blue and water. And I think that's probably where that impulse comes to try and fill it with blue coloring. But trying to match the color of the water to the color of the sky is a challenge because, of course, the sky is constantly changing its color as the clouds go by. So I think what people don't anticipate is that when you look at the water, what you're really doing is stitching together the color that you're seeing in the water with the color of the sky in that instant. And that's what you're sort of after, is that kind of cohesion of a visual experience.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Okay, Bevel, here's something I had to bring up, because whenever I mentioned to people the topic of this conversation today, they talked about a time in their life, sometimes as a little kid or maybe as a college student or whatever, where they wondered, do I see the color, say, red the same way other people do? And like, it's a mind-wrecking philosophical quandary for them that I'm guessing you get asked about all the time, probably. What do you say to people when they bring that up?
Yeah, it's one of the oldest questions. It was raised first by John Locke, who is a philosopher, British empiricist philosopher, who asked, you know, when I look at a marigold flower, is it the same as you looking at a violet, you know, one of those violet colors? And the answer is, we can't really know for sure, but we do have some pretty darn good clues. The first is, you know, if really you experience color very differently from me, then we wouldn't have a conceptual framework that would allow us to have a meaningful conversation. And in the old days, it used to be thought that it's conceivable you could see a different color because maybe the tuning properties in your retina might be different. But what, now we know what the tuning properties are, and we know that they're consistent from person to person. So there's a pretty darn good chance that when you see red, I'm seeing the same thing. We do have some brain imaging data where we compare from one person to the next and show that there's a similar pattern of response in the two people. But, you know, the question is a hard one. And the reason it's a hard one is that we were astounded to discover that there is more brain, cerebral cortex, you know, the thinking part of your brain, involved in color perception. There's as much involved in color perception as there is involved in face recognition. So you have a lot of brain doing color, and it tells us that color is something really deep and fundamental to the human experience. So I'd find it hard to imagine that, you know, evolution would go to all the trouble to make all of that brain and have it spit out some random piece of noise that didn't mean anything to you and me.
It's a good place to leave it. Bevel, thanks a lot for sharing your research with us.
My pleasure. This has been fun.
That's Bevel Conway, a neuroscientist, artist, and senior investigator in the Perception, Cognition, and Action section of the National Eye Institute within the National Institutes of Health. He joined us today to talk about how we see colors and what colors tell us about the world around us. If you're wondering what art created by a neuroscientist who studies color looks like, you can follow his work at bevelconway.com. Let's get a link to that up on the program note. You can find that at wpr.org/centraltime. Cool 3D stuff. If you have a funny story to share about a disagreement over color, you can still share that. Email ideas@wpr.org.